examined the Maimonides Sefer Mitzvah, Kaonist Mitzvah, Yad Mitzvah, we come across three mitzvahs which are related to the first night of Pesach. First is Pesach, because nowadays we don't have the Pesach. Then second, Matzah. And the third, Sipur Yetzirah Mitzvah. Morer is not counted as a separate commandment, a separate precept. Morer is included in the precept of Pesach. Because Morer Bezman Hazeh, when there is no Korban Pesach, no Pesach, in Morer Bezman Hazeh, not mandatory, minatere, minareisen. It's only a rabbinic ordinance from which obligates us to eat Morer. While Matzah and Pesach are two independent mitzvahs. Of course, in the third mitzvah is Sipur Yetzirah Mitzrayim. I don't want to concentrate on other mitzvahs. I'll take up too much time. It's quite complicated. Sipur Yetzirah Mitzrayim. We call it Sipur Yetzirah Mitzrayim. I mean, we could have used many terms in order to designate, so to say, the recital that we call Agode on the first night of Pesach. Many terms in Hebrew, there was quite a number, a group of terms which would cover Saper, Vyomar Tolevimcho, Vikade Tolevimcho, Vyomahulim, Amiro, Agode, Sipu. However, the Rambam, calls it Lisaper, Yitzias Mitzrayim. He used the verb Siper, Saper. If you take the Rambam, if it's coming to matter, say the Rambam at the beginning, Leisaper b'yitzias Mitzrayim b'yisi halaylo. Leisaper. Interesting is that the book is not called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, but it's called Agode. According to the Rambam, it should have been called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the term Lisaper was not coined by the Rambam. You find the term, you come across the term in the God itself, Mitzvah Alenu Lisaper Mitzias Mitzrayim Kol Eisei Halayla. Mitzvah Mitzrayim, Chol Amar Be Lisaper Mitzias Mitzrayim Arzeh Mishibach. Maisi Berav Lezach Mishuah Shoyim Misaprim Mitzias Mitzrayim Kol Eisei Halayla. Is the term not a means, that's an invention by my mind. It's much older than my mind. But it's strange that the book is not called Sipur Agode. Of course, it could have been called Sipur or Sefer, basically. It's almost, they derive, both terms derive from Saper. Yeah. But the book is called Agode, not Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's something else strange. Saper, again, it's a question of cases now, the grammatical cases. Saper in Hebrew usually comes in the objective or accusative case. Siparti le'es ha'dovar hazeh. Va'isaper meishe le'yisrei chesnei eiskol asher osra deshem le'mitzrayim. Saper Meshe told his father-in-law Yisroi, whatever God has done to Mitzrayim. Ace is always the accusative case. Precious Bora, the Kimes HaShemayim, Vesorat. Aniko Yisiv Michtar, I write a letter. It's always the accusative case. It's a plain transitive verb. There is another form. Basically, we don't find this form too often. We come across it with reference to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The man impossible, the term Tisaper is impossible. The man Tisaper Bosni Vilcho Ven Vilcho. Eifasher is allowed in Mitzrayim. Again, the accusative case. Objective case. Eifasher is allowed in Mitzrayim. A scholar is allowed in Mitzrayim. Accusative case. Maimonides, not Maimonides, but Agode itself, never uses Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in the accusative case. But always prefer the ablative case. Leisaper b'yitzias Mitzrayim. I mean, the verb is not a plain transitive verb, but is always accompanied by the base is always ablative in Hebrew. How was it? By the ablative case. And usually, you know that it's no languages, and particular in Hebrew, the case changes the meaning of the verb. It's not just a formal amazing. The conjunction of the verb with the object in a certain case changes the whole semantics of the verb. The semantics of the verb is determined by the case which follows it. Whoever knows grammar. So, lesatur biyutzias mitzrayim. Mitzvah leinu lesatur biyutzias mitzrayim. L'cholamah v'lesatur biyutzias mitzrayim. Maisi v'rab el'ezer v'rab et'afen v'yom nesatrim biyutzias mitzrayim. Not v'yom nesatrim al'edis yutzias mitzrayim. Ores yutzias mitzrayim. Because we said, Eis asher osa l'shem l'farel v'esatur meishen l'yisrech eisne Eis asher osa l'shem l'farel l'chol mitzrayim. The man to suffer was the Vilcho and Vilcho is Asher is Salalti from Mitzrayim. Yeah. But the Bala Gode, whoever the author of the Gode was, it's a very ancient text, one of the most ancient texts we have after Rosh Baal Peh. And the Rambam and all the Shenim have never used this reference to the story of, to the recital of the story of the Exodus on the first night of Pesach, the term Sipur. In the accusative case, but always in the ablative case. Be it to your mitzvah. Now let us, just a moment, I'll come to it. Let us examine now where is the word Agode that we use. Of course, we got it on Vilcho Be'im Ahulemer. Ba'voze Osra Deshem Limitation Mitzrayim. However, the Rigadeto is not a single term or the only term which somehow, is related to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. V'yomartu l'vincha. V'yomartu l'vincha. V'yomartu l'vincha refers to the Shin Yedei Yerishul. V'avazor HaShem Rivet Yetzias Mitzrayim, L'vilalei, it's actually the tshuva, the answer to the Rosha. Anyway, V'yomartu l'vincha. What is the Shin Yedei Yerishul in the Chumash? Regarding Vilcha by Mahu Lemia, Babazir Hashem Limitation Mitzrayim. The Vamartel in Vilcha, the Chizik Yodet Son Hashem Mitzrayim. We don't call the recital of the book of the Agore, or the story of the Agore, of the Exodus, Amiro, but we call it Agore. It's apparently Agore semantically conveys to us something which Amiro does not contain. However, let us see, is it old, this expression Agore? Or Agore? Of course, it's very old. The Gemara tells us that Kuftes Zayin in Arve Psochim. The Gemara says, Merema, Oma Merema, Merema said, Shaltinu have inquired, the Rabbon and the Rav Yosef, to the scholars of the Rav Yosef's Academy, Man Doma Agadete Be Rav Yosef, who is the one who recites Agadete in Rav Yosef's house, because Rav Yosef was blind, so he couldn't see. Omru Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef himself does it. By heart, out of memory. Man domar agadete be Rav Sheshes, I inquired. Rav Sheshes was also a blind scholar. Amru Rav Sheshes himself. So you have agadete already. Of course, you have the agadete with the aleph at the end instead of the hey. This is the usual. It's the usual, I mean, the Asius himself is the hey at the end. Askoro, I mean. This is quite usual, I mean. Shouldn't attract our attention. But the term Agodo is mentioned in the Gemara. My manager, if you'll open the book, Perek Zayin, Aloche Hei, he gives an outline of the Agodo, in particular of the prerequisite which we have to meet in order, to fulfill the obligation of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So he has the main elements, the main ingredients of the Agode, of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and at the end he says, Udvorim Oelu Kulam, and all those things, Nikroim Agode, are called Agode. So the Rambam says. It means both are correct terms, the terms which are basically are very old and go back to the Talmudic period or to the Tannaitic period. What's the difference between Agode and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? When you say Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's basically not correct. Because this is, when you say always Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, when you form a noun out of the verb, you say Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, means that the verb comes in the objective case always. Because because the verb appears in not in the objective case, but in the ablative case, then you couldn't say Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, you couldn't form the, you couldn't introduce the genitive here, the smichus, the genitive smichus. Then you should have said simply Sipur Bi Yitzias Mitzrayim. But apparently it's for convenience, I mean. And it's, so you call it Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, but whenever you use the verb, so you will never say Risaper Es Yitzias Mitzrayim, but well, it sounds funny, to my ears at least, to say Risaper Es Yitzias Mitzrayim. Even though, I mean, from a lingual viewpoint, it's a perfect phrase. But you will say, always say Risaper Bi Yitzias Mitzrayim. The difference between Agode and Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is as follows, it's very simple. When you say Sipur in general, it means a detailed story. A detailed story. If you give just a short message, or you describe, or you portray a situation in several sentences, you will never call it Sipur. Sipur means simply a story. Sipur is a story, basically. And I told you many times that Sipur comes always, Sipur and Seifer, a writer, a scribe, whatever it is, a scholar, and Sofer and Count, derive from the same root. A Sipur means, simply, you give the background, and you tell the development of certain events, and you point out the high mark of the development, the dramatic elements which were involved, and then how finally the story wound up and reached a peak or culminated and so forth. Sipur means a recital, I mean, or simply to tell a story, I mean, a detailed story, actually, and not only in a descriptive manner, detailed, but even in an explanatory manner, to explain the causes of why it happened. What precipitated certain events, and what were the results of certain events? I mean, Sipur means a complete story both horizontally and vertically, in depth and in width, as to area. This is Sipur. And that, in particularly, when the Sipur comes in the ablative, when you say Risaper is the time, it's all right. It's also a detailed story, not just a. Sipur is never a survey, or never an abbreviation, I mean, Sipur in Hebrew. Sipur means a detailed story, I mean, you don't skip, you don't tell me details. Important details, I mean, yes, Sipur is fine. But when you use the ablative, and you call it Risaper Bi Yitzias Mitzrayim, means more than tell. But Risaper Bi Yitzias Mitzrayim means to explore, to do research, to study. Leisaper Es Yitzias Mitzrayim means to tell the story, descriptive manner, even explaining the geology and the causal nexus of the story, and even going into detail. But it is just, I mean, a tale. When you say Leisaper Es Yitzias Mitzrayim, means a study, to study an inquiry of Yitzias Mitzrayim. What do you understand by it? After all, the most outstanding scholars of Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, the most outstanding scholars perhaps in our history, you can imagine that he did not just repeat the story 5 times, 10 times. So another question. What do you mean, what do you mean? Well, you learned him. You can simply substitute for Misaprim is in time, they studied, they explored, they investigated, they examined. Of course, when you examine alone, you couldn't say Misaprim. When you examine, I mean, in a group, I mean, investigate, one makes suggestions, the other one, I mean, responds, and so forth, and they exchange ideas. There is a flow of thought. So you will call Misaprim. But Misaprim Bi Yitzias Mitzrayim. If the person had said Misaprim Es Yitzias Mitzrayim, it would be a bit paradoxical. The person had said these things, it would appear paradoxical. Because it means just tell and retell and retell. It makes no sense to tell and retell And again, the same thing cannot be told 5 times. Narrate the story once. We cannot narrate 50 times the story. The whole night, and they were very much involved in it. But they haven't noticed, they didn't notice even that they spend the night passed so quickly that the Talmudim, their disciples, had to come and to pull them by their sleeves and say, it's time to go to shul, to the smerash. It was already day after daybreak. It means they were involved, completely absorbed by the story. This means be it, yes, Mitzrayim. The adjective conveys it. The accusative or the objective would have never conveyed. I mean, this meaning. When the shaptim be it, yes, Mitzrayim. Now you'll tell you like that. V'chol amar be mitzvah aleinu l'sater be it, yes, Mitzrayim. You see, it's the mitzvah of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, not just to tell a story, not just to tell a mechanical tale. You have a text, no matter how elaborate the text is, I don't care how elaborate the text is, and how many details the text contains, and how thorough the text is. As long as on my part it is just the recital of a text, there is no Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim means I should explore, I should understand, I should analyze, I should examine, re-examine, simply I should be intellectually and emotionally involved in it. The ablative always, the base in general, the base in Hebrew, I mean, wherever there is the base is added, it means, it's many times it is quite characteristic of strength. Ki beyo adishem tzuri lamim. Ki beyo yudheis. What do you mean, beyo adishem tzuri lamim? God is omnipotent because he's the creator of the world. Instead, to say yud hei, is kibor, chazak, to say beyo adishem tzuri lamim. The base. The base means strength. The base of the adjective means strong, in complete involvement, complete absorption. We have an old Hebrew, I mean, it's nothing new in that. The ablative means. Leisatabitism means to be absorbed and to be involved, to be complete, I mean, to study and re-study, examine and re-examine, to do research. I mean, of course, it is Mitzrayim, the relevance to us nowadays. I mean, it's not just a story of an old event, it is an eternal story, basically. This is Leisatel Beit, yes, Mitzrayim. The Cholamad and Leisatel Beit is Mitzrayim, meaning he keeps on the whole night of Pesach repeating the story, telling you it. Retelling the story, re-narrating the story. No, this is ridiculous. But what happens finally, whoever understands better, whoever explores it more, whoever examines it more, whoever derives conclusions, infers from this story. I mean, vis-a-vis whoever by analogy actually infers from this story certain conclusions which are relevant to us, our modern problems, and so forth. That's why it's a beat, yes, that's right. Now, in contradistinction to Sipur, particularly when Sipur is accompanied by the ablative case, be, so the word hagit, to tell, or agodo, means, on the contrary, means a short statement, a very relevant statement, but short. A statement which actually is related to certain highlights, to certain important central events, or does not go into detail. You told very important, very relevant news, or very relevant, I mean, information. This habit means, sometimes, many times, means simply to inform. If you inform a person, you advise him, you apprise him of certain events which are relevant to him, you don't tell him a long scale, I mean. You simply break the news to him. I mean, in brief terms, I mean. You don't go on telling him a long tale. I'll tell you the information will be lost in detail. It's ridiculous. Yes, I'll come to it. Yes. Agode means a statement, terseness, very relevant, extremely relevant. On the contrary, the details are left out, the details. The deep is secondary, of secondary nature, you see. The aspects are, of course, included in the message. But it's more a message which is related, which is brief in pairs, and is related to central events, not peripheral events, you understand? And it is, and very true, because you have for his testimony to testify, and the witness testifies before the court. The testimony of Yahadus means the final evidence. There is no evidence which is above testimony, I mean, testimony of witness, you know that very well. But one bears witness is in the Yagid in Talmudic Hebrew, it is Talmudic vocabulary, is bearing witness or testifying or giving testimony is called Agodas Eidos. Why? Well, Agodas Eidos something must consist of relevant information, I mean, it cannot consist of details which are irrelevant and completely have no bearing upon the case which is before the court. The justice or the dayan has to limit the alias if the alias gets off the track. And you know that some people who cannot be exact, cannot be precise, and will tell the court a story which has no bearing on the case which is litigation. So you've got to guide him. It means it's a short message, very important, of extreme importance to someone, of course, to the person who is indicted, to the prisoner, the dock. Very important, but short, not long. It means, of course, so basically, Agoda and Sipur, I want you to understand, are the two poles between which the narration of the Exodus, so to say, swings back and forth, you see. Agoda is the minimum. Sipur is the maximum, even though it's very hard to speak of a maximum. There is no maximum. The sky is the limit sometimes, you see. Agoda means the shortest message. If a person cannot study Sipur, he's intellectually incapable, he lacks in scholarship. I mean, after all, it's intellectual performance. Or he doesn't know, he has no time, he's sick, he suffers, I mean. So there is a minimum which is necessary to tell. A minimum. The minimum is what? Is a synopsis. Basically, the minimum is a synopsis, is the digest of what? Of what? Of the sipur. The agoda is the digest or the synopsis of the sipur. I mean, of course, sipur is very hard to give a digest of sipur since sipur is almost boundless, you see. It's very vast, I mean, intellectually vast in depth. It's only vast in area, I mean. But agoda means the minimum which is indispensable. You see, the mitzvah sipur yetzias mitzrayim, there are certain mitzvahs, certain precepts, which have neither a minimum nor a maximum. There is only, you have to meet certain prerequisites. If you met the prerequisite, so you don't have to add, or there's no need for prolonging the act. I mean, either you fulfill the mitzvah, you discharge your duty, or you don't. Sipur yetzias mitzrayim belongs to that group of mitzvahs, which is basically, it is up to the person, individual, I mean, to determine the nature of the mitzvah. The mitzvah can be performed with a minimum of effort, and it's also possible to fulfill the mitzvah, I mean, at a different level, at a much higher level, you see. There are levels, various levels to the kiyum mitzvah. I'll give you, for instance, like a mitzvah of tzedakah. Of course, there is a minimum of tzedakah, but actually, tzedakah cannot be said it is the same mitzvah. I mean, it depends, first of all, it depends upon the amount I give. It depends to whom I give. It depends upon the urgency. It also depends upon the way, how I give. This is very important in tzedakah. Tzedakah is not only how much I give, it's important, but how I give. If I give, I mean, this courtesy and kindness, and I actually have compassion with the person who is in need, and so forth, and so on. I mean, it's a different mitzvah, you see. And tzedakah is also, I mean, proportionate to my ability, I mean. The poor man cannot do as much tzedakah as the rich man, and so forth. And so tzedakah is also a minimum, more or less, but there is almost no maximum, there is no ceiling to tzedakah. Not to the amount, perhaps the amount I give, I mean, Chazal have imposed a certain ceiling, one-fifth, anyway. But as far as the experience, the sympathetic experience with the person who is in need. I mean, this is something which no one could place a feeling about. I mean, the more sympathy I display, the more compassion I exhibit, and the more comfortable I make the person who has to beg or ask me for a favor, the greater is my mitzvah, the greater is my performance of art. The same is true of Talmud Torah. I mean, everybody studies, but various levels of studies, from the lowest level to the highest. The Sipuritism Triumph belongs also into that group. I mean, the Sipur means the mitzvah at the highest level. And the mitzvah contains study and research and deep understanding and insight into Jewish destiny, the destiny of old, our modern destiny of the future. I mean, it involves this involvement, re-experiencing, and so forth on. The secret of the time is only a question of re-experiencing. Hagoda means the minimum which is indispensable. If you'll take a look in Rambam, when the Rambam speaks, Perek Zion, before he says, Mitzaseh shall teiro lesaper benissim v'nefloish nasasin v'metzrayim. Sipur, because this is the mitzvah. The mitzvah, I mean, is actually required of us that we perform, I mean, our duty, fulfill our duty at the highest level, you understand? But then, he says, Vitzorish in Dalet, he gives already the criteria without which, or the prerequisites, which are indispensable. If I said less, I haven't fulfilled my duty. Master Bignusum Sayim Bishmach, I've got to tell something about slavery or oppression or Jewish suffering, and then I have to tell about redemption. And Shleshit Mor Mishma Mashlech Mor Mel Bapesach Yosef Havasi Rabban Gamliel. And those things are called agore. What's mean agore? The most relevant, the shortest, the briefest, and the most relevant, compact tale of Sipuritism Triumph. If I miss one of those aspects, I have not fulfilled my mitzvah. So Sipuritism Triumph means, almost the boundless or the vast. It means the study of Yetzias Mitzrayim, or the re-examination, re-experiencing of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Agoda means the shortest possible message, which Chacham has prepared for those who are incapable to tell Yetzias Mitzrayim at a very high level. This is basic. Now let me ask you, what is our Agoda? Is Agoda or Sipur? We call it Agoda, of course. The text itself is Agoda, nothing else. The text itself is Agoda. The text is just a frame. Basically, the text is a frame. Agoda is nothing but a frame. It is a frame which you have to fill in. It's basically, the text is just a frame. It means the meaning. It's Agoda. Because in the text, this is gnus, means suffering, slavery, disgrace, what we call historical disgrace. To be a slave means historical disgrace. Then you have mitzvah ibn David Zohar, Yavisim Mitzrayim, it's again disgrace at another level, at a spiritual level. Then you have the Gula, the story of the redemption, Arami Ivedori, Rabban Gamliel, and the two chapters of Halel is basically what the Rambam calls Agoda. It means the minimum. We say basically the minimum. If one is ready to fill in, or to explore, to behold a different vision, of course, but it is correct that we call it Agoda, not Sipur, because Sipur is something which is basically endless, which cannot be contained in a book. But whatever is contained in a book, whatever can be pressed in into a certain frame of reference, is not a Sipur, it's Agoda. Sipur intellectual, exploration and investigation and gaining insights into great events cannot be explained in writing. You cannot have a can give just can just determine the minimum, the principles. As I said, it's frame of reference, nothing else. It's basically Ahavada is not to be considered Sipur. Sipur is already up to an individual. Each individual has his own Sipur. Each individual understands Ahavada differently. Each individual depends upon his intelligence more than, matter of fact, it depends more on intuitive approach, upon sensitivity to historical events, and reading between the lines, the ability to read between the lines, than on intellectual, brilliance. It's not so much the intellect which gets involved in Agode, but the heart, as the heart, as the heart. But that's why you call it Agode. That's what I want you to understand. In the Agode itself, there's enough space, enough room, to fill in, to both in depth, vertically and horizontally. It's an elastic, the book of Agode is very elastic. You can stretch it. You can stretch it as much as you want. As much as you want. So Agode basically is the formal, the text which meets formally the basic prerequisites. And the basic prerequisites in the Agode are three. Gnus and Shvach, means you start with disgrace, and you conclude with praise, with slavery, redemption, at two levels. At the level of physical disgrace, slavery sin, redemption, physical, political redemption, and at the level of spiritual disgrace, idolatry, and spiritual elevation, means when you, our covenant with God, this is not. Then Arame Vidovi, the Parsh of Arame Vidovi, interpretation, and Rabbi Gamliel, that's all. Basically, that's all. It's Gnus and Shvach at two levels, at the physical political level and at the spiritual level. The physical political level, you just state, Avodu Yilatar Mitzrayim, we are slave unto Pharaoh, by the Tiyashim Hashem Yachazot, and God has taken us out with a strong hand and outstretched arm. That's all. Mazlus Lai Mishvach. Then you have Mitzvah David Zohar Yavisinu Mitzrayim. Our forefathers have worshipped the idols. Vash of Kirvon HaMokim Avadosei, and now God has brought us near Him, to serve Him. This means the change from an idolatrous people into monotheistic people. It's also Gnus and Shvach. Then you have the interpretation of Arami Vidovi, which is a difficult section of the Godhead, but the interpretation of Arami Vidovi, the whole parish of Arami Vidovi. You interpret each word, Arami Vidovi Yer Mitzrayim. Each word is interpreted by introducing a parallel from the book of Shmeis, from the Exodus. You take away Arami Vidovi, the parish is mentioned in Deuteronomy. So you take the parish, and you take almost each word, and you interpret the word, and in order to confirm your interpretation that the comment is right, you quote a parallel phrase. For instance, Arami Vidovi Yered Mitzrayim, the Lamech Le Yorav, the Yaakov Avinu Lishtakiyav Mitzrayim, Logosha, Moshe Ne'ema, Zerof, Moshe Ne'ema, Otsu, כמו שנאמר, and so forth on. ויצאנו לשם מצרים, כמו שנאמר. You take the Rami Vidovi, the parasha which actually contains the story of Exodus, in a very brief and terse fashion. You take the Rami Vidovi, each word, you compare with the phrase from Exodus, and by this comparison, by this analogy, you arrive at certain conclusions. It means you interpret the parasha. We'll come later, but not this time, tonight, but next time. Yeah. This is the second element of the Agode. The third element of the Agode is Rabban Gamliel Oyeimeo, because Romar Shleshit Borem Eluba Pesach, the explanation of Pesach Chometz Pesach Matzah and Moreir, and this is the third, and the fourth is Hallel. That's all. Basically four elements. The descriptive Agode is three, consists, I want you to understand. The Agode, when you say Agode, it consists of two parts. One descriptive part, and one part of recital of praise. Hymn, the hymnal part of the Agode. The descriptive part of the first half of the Agode consists of three ingredients, of three elements. Gnus and Shvach. With Gnus and Shvach, there is a subdivision to Gnus and Shvach. Gnus and Shvach at the political, economic level, and Gnus and Shvach at a spiritual level. The Gnus and Shvach of a political nature is Agode Moyino. And of a spiritual nature is Mitzvah Yom Zohar Yavseinu Mitzrayim. Above the Gnus and Shvach, there is the Droshas Rabban Gamliel, Arami Vidovi. You have to recite the Parsha Arami Vidovi and interpret the Parsha. Two Above the third layer is Rabban Gabriel, that you have to point out in the three basic mitzvahs, Pesach, Matzah, and Moreh, and explain the symbolism involved in each of the mitzvahs. Pesach, because God protects over the houses, and Matzah, it's a symbol of redemption, Moreh is a symbol of slavery, oppression, and so forth. But to announce the symbolic meaning of Pesach, Matzah, and Moreh, this is the third element of the script of Agoreh. And as far as the narration is concerned, you conclude. But following the narration, you have to recite Hallel. You recite two chapters of Hallel. And this is the hymnal part of that. This Agoreh, but within that frame of reference, framework, I mean, there are almost boundless possibilities how to fill in and how to explain and how to interpret and how to examine and so forth. That's what Ram says, Udvorim Elo Nikroim Agoreh. I want you to understand that this is very important. Now, let us see. The Agoreh starts out with a strange introductory sentence. Two sentences. The Rolach Mu'anyo, the Acholah of a son of Aaron in Mitzroy, called the Chfin Yisri Yechel, called the Tushri Yisri Yisr. Shat Ocholah Shonabo Aaron in Israel, Shat Avdo Shonabo Becheren. Basically, I'll analyze that. It is strange for a simple reason. Following Olach Mu'anyo, the Manishtana comes in. Basically, Manishtana, the question is raised. Why Matzah? It's the first question. So by saying Olach Mu'anyo, so you answer the question because the latter who was actually, addressed to you. Yeah? You already said Olach Mu'anyo, that's all. It's very strange. And secondly, this is called the Chfi Yisri Yichl, called the Tzrich Yisri Yitzach. Why this duplication? Kol B'Shvin means whoever is hungry. Kafno. Kafno is in Aramaic hunger, starvation, famine. Kol B'Shvin, whoever is hungry, whoever is famished. Yisri Yichl, called the Tzrich Yisri Yitzach. And then suddenly, there is, without any transition, you proclaim Oshata Ochol, Lishon Abba Be'arad Yisroel, Oshata Avdi, Lishon Abba Be'necher. There are some who suggested that basically these two parts are in the wrong order. The Roshat Ochol, Lishon Abba Be'arad Yisroel, Roshat Avdi, Lishon Abba Be'necher should come first. He used to say that any celebration after the home in Goles, any celebration, is the same as at the end of the Seder, we say Lishon Abba Be'arad, or the same manner as in Kippur at the conclusion of the services. After Nila, you say Lishon Abba Be'arad. We used to start a celebration of a service also with the announcement, with the proclamation Lishon Abba Be'arad. So when they sat down after Kiddush, when they sat down to recite Agoreh, so they said, Oshato Ochol Lishon Abba Be'arad Yisroel, Oshato Avdi Lishon Abba Be'arad. They said it, by the way. This was the beginning. This was, so to say, the introduction to any service or to any kind of celebration. Then they said, Olach Ma'anyo Adachola Avason Abba'arad Yisroel, called the Chin Yisr Yechel, called the Tzuch Yisr Yisach. So these two sentences of Olach Ma'anyo, called the Chin, should follow the Roshat Ochol Lishon Abba Be'arad Yisroel, Roshat Lishon Abba Be'arad. They say this was apparently customary for them to announce at all weddings, at all simchas, at all meals. They set out to elaborate meal, or when they were about to celebrate an event, or a yontef, and any yontef. They used to say, Roshat Ochol Lishon Abba Be'arad Yisroel, Roshat Avdo Lishon Abba Be'arad. Because we find something of that custom in our proclaiming at the end of that God, the conclusion of that God, Lishon Abba Be'arad. Oh, see, in Kippur night, Lishon Abba Be'arad. In Kippur night, in Kippur at the after Nilay. So that's how they used to start, how they used to amend. The Seder commands with Oshata Ochol Lishon Abba Be'arad Yisroel, Oshata Avdo Lishon Abba Be'necheret. After they proclaimed that, this was an announcement. They used to say, Olach Ma'anyo Dachol Avason Abba'arod Mitzroim, called the Fi Yisr Yechel, called the Tzuch Yisr Yisr. That's what some historians suggest. I don't believe it. First of all, I don't like when they try to distort certain order. The Agoreh, not only the Agoreh, any religious text has been preserved because countless generations have guarded it with zeal and devotion. And I don't believe, the text was distorted. So apparently there is a transition. In my opinion, the Olach Ma'anyo, they used to commence, the Seder commences with Olach. Say Olach Ma'anyo, the Cholav Son of Be'arod Mitzroim, called the Fi Yisri Yechel, called the Tzuch Yisri Yisra. That's what some historians suggest. I don't believe it. First of all, I don't like when they try to distort certain order. They are God, not only they are God, any religious text has been preserved because countless generations have actually have guarded it with zeal and devotion. And I don't believe, in the text where they started. So apparently there is a transaction, in my opinion, the whole Achmaya they used to commence, they say that commences with the whole Achmaya, and the Shat Orocho follows it. I don't believe, but for them, to change in order and even, what even Chumash means nothing. So certainly, whole Achmaya, the whole Avisona, why not? So you say, Shat Orocho Shnabo Barani, so Shat Avle Shnabo Barani, and then secondly, it is just there. It's just a guess on their part. It's hypothetical that every celebration and every elaborate meal or every simcha commenced with the solemn proclamation, Ashat Orocho L'Shana Bo Ba'al Yisrael. It's just, their own invention. They have no proof and they cannot. They have no evidence, to substantiate it. But on the other hand, they have not explained what is the whole Achmanyo, the significance of the whole Achmanyo. The whole of the son of Aram and Troy, what's the significance? Called the three years of Yisrael, called the three years of Yisrael. What Anjo is, whatever Anjo, basically the term Lachmo Anjo, I want to give you a few translations of Lachmo Anjo. Because Lachmo Anjo, the term is not simple. It's mentioned the Torah only once, in Deuteronomy, in Re, Lechemene. What is Lechemene? Is one interpretation is the Gemara in Pesachim. A lechemene means lechem she'enin olov dvorim harve. The bread of recital. Why? When you eat your bread, you recite the agode. With the matzah. You first recite the agode and then you eat the matzah. It is the bread of many words. The bread of recital or of narration. This is lachmanyo. Not lechem eni from oni v'onisova mardo. You shall say v'onisova mardo. Say it loud for this one. The only the Amru, and the Avim should raise their voices. That's the one. Lechem she'inim olav dvarim harve. As a matter of fact, this interpretation has a lachic relevance that we require that the matzah be on the table while the God is recited. You remove the matzah before Manishtano, but after Manishtano is concluded, you return the matzah on the table. Because during the recital of the Agoda, during the narration, the matzah should be on the table. The lechem eini means the lechem, the bread of many words, the bread of narration, the bread of recital, the bread of a tale. Another interpretation is olach mu'anyo, lechem eini means the bread of the poor, the bread of the poor. As the poor man. That means it's in genitive. It's smichus. Lechem eini, lechem oni. Lechem shelo oni. Because the oni who cannot afford to spend too much time on baking bread and has, and the baking bread, it accelerates actually the process of baking and it cannot wait for the ise to rise, for the dough to rise, to ferment. What it takes, he just mixes water with flour. And puts it in the oven. Lechem eini means lechem shelo oni. Another interpretation of the poor man. But then there is a third interpretation. Lechem eini, poor bread. Not the bread of the poor man, but lechem eini means the bread of poverty. But you have to understand it in English. In Hebrew it is smichus. It is two verbs, one in nominative, the other one in genitive, like any smichus form. But in English, it's very hard to... You say the bread of poverty, it conveys something else. It means the poor bread. Why is the bread poor? Because you must not mix the dough with anything but plain water. You cannot mix the dough with honey or butter or the flour. You cannot mix the flour with wine, oil, no pastry. Because pastry is called matzah ashiro, rich bread. Of course it's rich. The fat, the sugar, you just mix the flour with plain water. This is called matzah shiro. And the halacha is that Pesach night, you cannot use for the Seder any egg matzah or any kind of matzah, because any egg matzah will be considered matzah shiro. Lechem eini is to be understood in simply physical terms. The lechem should only consist of two ingredients, a flour and water, plain water. So That's what you call matzah ashir. A matzah ashir is in other means the chavasi bapesa. Or the Rambam says, Havelinoshineso. You don't need, or you don't mix the flour, or you don't make the dough. Beyayin ibishemen, either with wine or with oil, is cholov or milk. Mishum lechemeni, because this would be called, if such a dough be formed, it would be considered not lechemeni, but lechemoshe, matzah shiro. Matzah shiro has been disqualified for the night of Pesach. Lechemeni. Now let us see. So I gave you three. Yes? The matzah, the bread of recital, of narration. Secondly, the bread of the poor man. It means it's baked quickly. You don't lose too much time. Third, what is third? The poor bread, it means just consisting of two ingredients, plain ingredients, flour and water. Now let me see, in the whole Achmanya, the way the Anya is introduced here, which interpretation would you apply to this sentence, phrase, Olach Mu'anya? You understand my question? The third one. Most probably the third one. Olach Mu'anya, I would say in Hebrew, Lechem Dal. Lechem Dal means poor bread. To the exclusion of what? As matzah shira, rich matzah, rich points, rich in eggs and sugar and all kinds of confetti and pastry and stuff. Yeah. Yacholu avasono be'aro dimetzroim. Of course, here, yacholu avasono be'aro dimetzroim can be interpreted in two ways. One way, yacholu avasono be'aro dimetzroim while they were slaves in Mitzrayim. While they were slaves in Mitzrayim. Because the slave simply was fed, first of all, because it was fed, the food which they gave the slave was of poor quality. Cheap of poor quality, it means, was no pastry, no. Without sugar, without anything, without wine or oil. It's plain water, the whole of the sun as slaves. Then it's very strange. Then we have usually the matzah, what's the matzah symbolic of? Then we have a new symbol for the matzah, which we don't mention later when we say that God. When you say that God, the matzah zushon eichem al shumo. So what do you say, matzah zushon eichem al shumo? Yeah? As he speak betekem shal avasein ala achmit. It means they had no time to wait for the dough to rise, to ferment. As nigolim melech malcham lochim, Kadosh Baruch Hu, revealed himself and told them to go. So basically, matzah is a symbol of geula. It's a symbol of redemption, of victory. So it's not me during their sojourn in Egypt as slaves, they ate matzah. There's no mention. On the contrary, the matzah, the geula came so quickly that they had no time, to prepare food. Become tzedel also. So the matzah is a symbol of what? Of quick geula, of quick redemption, or sudden redemption. Spontaneous redemptions, which somehow, unexpectedly, actually they were confronted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was ready to redeem them and to take them out of Egypt suddenly, without anticipating that this will happen so soon. And that's why the best they could do is to bake matzah. So they had no time, not because they were slaves or oppressed, on the contrary, they had no time. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, quickened the process of Geula and took them out, suddenly, correct? If you interpret the Acholu Avosono Be'aro de Mitzrayim in the same manner, it means the Acholu Avosono that our forefathers ate Be'aro de Mitzrayim in the land of Mitzrayim. When in the land of Mitzrayim? When? So then you have a second aspect of matzah, which is contradictory, basically, of the symbolism of matzah, which Rabban Gamliel has mentioned. But according to Gamliel, the symbolism of the symbol of matzah is redemption, kri gula, sudden gula, unexpected gula. And here matzah symbolizes not gula, just like moher symbolizes slavery, oppression. Simply, they had nothing else but matzah. Nothing else but the lechemeni.
יכול לעבוסון לו בארון המצרים. ויפה עוד הרסם מפורשים, הוא הרדי תוסי דד יכול לעבוסון לו בארון המצרים, is identical with Matzis Rishon Eichem Al Shumo. בארון המצרים is before they left. It means that should the very Rabban Gamliel interpret. The very Rabban Gamliel wants us to understand. So Matzis retains its symbolism and we have to do that. You understand? That's what some want to say. Al Shumo, Al Shumo, so it's Gula. And basically the fact that Matzah is a symbol of Gula is not just a problem, I mean, of accepting that symbol or the other symbol. It's a question of halacha, whether you have to lean during Achilles Matzah or you eat Matzah while you sit straight. You don't lean against your chair. Morer is consumed without a saber. Without a saber, you sit straight while you eat the morer. When you eat the matzah, you have to lean on your left side. Like that. Why? Because morer is symbolic of avdus, and matzah is symbolic characteristic of gula. Yeah. If you interpret the achol avasona b'arad mitzrayim literally, they ate while they were slaves. So matzah has a double aspect. Basically, there is an inner contradiction within the matzah. On the one hand, the matzah symbolizes geula, on the other hand, slavery and oppression, you see. Of course, but there are many, the Chachmei Kabbalah, all the Chachmei Kabbalah, and even the Chachmei Chassidus, they have accepted the double symbolism of matzah. They've accepted the double symbolism of matzah. That matzah is not only geula, but matzah is slavery, avdus as well. The question is, why did the halacha, actually require a sebe for matzah? It's all right, can be resolved. But they, the Chachmei Kabbalah, in particular the Chachmei Chassidus, mainly the Tanya in Yisida, has accepted, without any reservation, that matzah lends itself to double symbol. On the one hand, matzah is the bread of the slave, and the same bread of the slave, God has converted into the symbol of Gula. God has taken the symbol of slavery and converted it into the symbol of Gula. But there is a double symbol to matzah. If you want, you can say the Achol HaVason, say the Achol HaVason of Arad Mitzrayim means just before the war ended. If you prefer this interpretation, then the Achol HaVason coincides perfectly with Rabbi Gamliel. So Matzah, the symbol of Matzah is just, the symbol of Matzah is one. I'm not too sure that those who want to reconcile the Achol HaVason of Arad Mitzrayim with Achnigel and Melech Nachal Noch HaKadosh Baruch Hu Golom, that those who want to reconcile are right. In my opinion, the Chachma Kabbalah are right. That Matzah, there is a double symbolism to Matzah. Matzah is the bread of the slave, and Matzah is the bread of the person who has been redeemed. Which is typical of Yadus. Yadus takes not a different symbol, but the same symbol, and converts it and transforms it into something which represents Geula redemption. Now, that's what I wanted just to tell you. You should know, the two possibilities, the two pshatim. This is called the Chi Yeseh V'Yechil, called the Chi Yeseh V'Yifsah. In my opinion, it has a completely different meaning. The Gemara tells us in Tan is that Chof. Chof is basic. Then whenever Ravuna was a rich man, whenever Ravuna sat down to eat the meal, he used to open the doors, used to send out his butler or whoever he was, his servant, they used to announce, called the Tzrich Yeseh V'Yech. Whoever is in need, let him come and eat. The Gemara quotes Ravuna, the Gemara in Tainis Daf Chof from the base, called the Tzrich Yeseh V'Yech. Apparently what Ravuna used to do every time he sat down to a meal, we do it on Pesach. Why I'm Pesach? Called the Chid. Rav Amram Goyen says, Rav Matis Yogoyen says, Ravune lived in the 3rd century. It's an old custom, 3rd century. Rav Matis Yogoyen, who lived in the 9th century, Rav Matis Yogoyen, writes in Chivas Agenik, Mina Kol Yisrael, customary throughout the unfortunate brothers, and the night of Pesach. That's Rav Matis. Of course, the Minek Moishitim Tzitzin into this whole church. So apparently it was not just called the Chvin, was not just one closed his door and locked the door and pulled down the window shades and the Venetian blinds and said called the Chvin Yisrael. But it's actually called Chvin Yisrael used to be a message. It used to
be apparently disseminated or announced days before Pesach. Days before Pesach. That's what Rav Matisyahu Goel. Days before Pesach used to be announced to the community, called the Chi Yisrael Yisrael, called the Tzuch Yisrael Yisrael. It was a reality to them. It was not just a ceremony. It was a reality. Why Pesach is being singled out? See, and the rest of the year, yes, why Pesach? I want you to understand, first of all, it was not just a statement made, at the night of Pesach, while the doors were closed, no one heard. It was simply they used to send out Shileach Shluchim, Rav Matisyahu Goel says, to send messengers, agents, to pick them up, to find them, and to bring everybody who is unfortunate, who was poor, and was alone, every lonely person, into the home of the more fortunate brother in order to celebrate Pesach. It was retained in the Agoda just as a phrase, but it was not a phrase, it was a historical reality. And we understand it fits beautifully in with the Moisritim institution. Also, what is the purpose of the Moisritim institution is to provide everybody, with all the need. Yes. So why Pesach was singled out of all holidays, not the entire year, why is Pesach being singled out? There are two reasons. There are basically two reasons. Why is Pesach? Usually, it should have been, this institution should have been actually introduced, not only with reference to Pesach, but as regards all holidays. Because in all holidays, wherever the Torah speaks of Simcha, of rejoicing, the Samachto, only the Torah enumerates. Atu, Vincho, Vitecho, you and thy son, thou and thy son, Va'alevi, Va'agir, Va'yosem, Va'almona, Asher Bekamecho. And the stranger, and the orphan, and the widow, and the lady was the poor man, Bishrech. And you know what the Ram writes, that if one, whoever, and apparently, the way the Ram describes Yontev, they used to open their doors, and Yontev, the gates, and the chateris, the yards were open completely ajar, the doors were open ajar, and anybody who wanted to come in and eat and participate and share was allowed to do so. And the Ram said that Mishenel Dalsis Chateri, whoever locks the gates of his home, Venimachil or Nim, the Ram is very strict and very. Israel, Uchshechel the Sheise, when he eats and drinks and feasts, should also have the gear, the stranger, and the yosem, the almona, and shoranim, all those are unfortunate and poor, they should also share in his, whatever he is. Avu mishinel dalsit chateir, whoever locks the doors of his house. Veichel v'sheise hu bono v'ishke, and only he shares with his children and his members of Allah, and his wife. V'numachul mashkel anim, and does not let others share in his meal, ulemor nefesh, ezu simchas mitzvah. It is not the simcha which it is decreed, and the simchas kreis. It's his own selfish feast. Valele ne'emar, that whatever their offers and their sacrifices are just abominable, and I don't approve of it. This is a rule which applies to all holidays. As a matter of fact, even to Purim, the Matanis Levianim, the institution of Matanis Levianim, is also the same. Why was the institution of Matanis Levianim introduced? Because then you share with your friends, Mishleach Moneh, sharing with your friends. So share particularly with those who are discriminated by destiny. All right, this is number one. Pesach was singled out from all other holidays, even though it's important. The same precept of tzedakah, of chesed, of sharing and making and having someone rejoice with me is applicable to all holidays, to all seasons where simcha was decreed, with regard to which simcha was decreed. So it is mainly important for Pesach. Why? Why is it so important for Pesach? Yes. It's all right, but applies. First of all, Inkom Pesach is interesting. Inkom Pesach is the Lokahu Shreini Yaakov. Inkom Pesach, the Torah speaks, we read it this morning, the Lokahu Shreini Yaakov. He and the neighbor, the next door neighbor, should bring, together they should bring the Paschal lamb. And there is one man Doma said that a single person cannot bring the korban. If he doesn't share the korban with someone else,
הם מביאים פסח על היוחד. Only a group, a chabure, brings the Pesach. When I mean we share the Pesach with someone else. It's in Pesach already, who is Shene Yaakov Evela? It means regardless of the show, who the neighbor is, rich or poor, rich or poor. And if the neighbor cannot afford to buy or share in the expense, so he has to provide it. It's already in Pesach, there is an allusion of somehow allusion to the fact that a man should not simply enjoy whatever he possesses alone, but should share whatever he has with others. For Pesach, the lokach who sell a boys or the family shares already. But if there's a lamb is too much for one family, the family is small, so the lokach who shene yakorev elav, let him see that the neighbor, the next door neighbor, shares in the Pesach, the Paschal lamb. This itself shows that there is the sense of togetherness, of simply of being together, and sense of compassion and sympathy, and the readiness to help, to extend help, was emphasized in the parsha of Korban Pesach. Secondly, there is something else. I said so many times about it. When the Jews came to Mitzrayim, they were not a people, you know that very well. The issue basically was just a clan. Then God addressed himself to Moses, before the Geula, he already used the term, not a term which denotes or signifies a people. Didn't he say to him, Ishmos? Didn't he say to him, Roi roisi esoni ami asher b'mitzrayim? וסקוסם שומעתי מפני נקסו, כי יודעתי אסמחיו, ואתו לכו ושלוח אחו אל פארי להיץ אסעם מבני ישראל ממצרים. ששמייס גימול, פוסוק זיין, שמייס גימול פוסוק זיין ופוסוק יוד. פוסוק יוד. And I told you many times that the term עמי means together. Im. Terms am is from him, being with. People cannot be called im if there is no solidarity. It cannot be called am if there is no solidarity. When you call am, it means it is indicative of a sense of solidarity on the part of the individual, and also, the readiness to share both joys and cares and travail and suffering together. This is a sense of solidarity, of compassionate solidarity. This is am, im, self like that. No doubt about it, philologically. So it means that Gulas Mitzrayim, the fact why were the Jews worthy of Gula, why were they worthy of Gula? Spiritually, they were not worthy. Alolev David Zorev, Alolev Zorev. You know, the complaint of Uzo, the representative of Mitzrayim, on the seventh day of Pesach. He said, why do you prefer the Jew to the Egyptian? They are both idolaters. They both, the godly blurs and all of the godly blurs. Spiritually, the Jew in Egypt was not, superior to his oppressor. Spiritually, the slave was not superior to the oppressor. No wonder. So the reason why the Jews were taken out of Egypt and were free is not because of their spiritual grandeur, but for another reason. Because of what? Because simply they were charitable. They helped each other. There was a feeling of solidarity. We shared whatever they had with each other. That's why they are called Am. They were together, they lived together. There was coexistence. There was interrelatedness. There was association. Since any group, any association is based upon a sense of solidarity. If you have no solidarity, you have no association. And this sense of solidarity, this sense of sympathy, that's what is responsible for the Gula. That's what Rabbi Sibera Misalevi says. This is responsible for the Gula. That's why the Rebbein Yishom said, Roi roisi esoni ami asher b'mitzrayim, oni, of my people, it means the people who live together. Asher b'mitzrayim, v'zakosom shomati, yeah, it's very interesting. She said, mipnei nekseyem, zakosom is plural. She said, mipnei nekseyem, ki yodati es machiveyem. And the strange is that the Apostle says, Roi roisi esoni ami asher b'mitzrayim, v'zakosom shomati, plural, mipnei nekseyem, singular, ki yodati es machivov. Singular for him. Why does the pasuk change from plural into singular? Because basically each one felt also the pain and the suffering of his next door neighbor, of his
Rechtel אומר, כי שמעתי מפני נקסובי, they reacted as if they were, if they had been just one individual, one person. כי יודעתי אס מחריבוב, מחריבוב הפוך, 600,000 Jews, but it was the pain of one person. And that's why that Pesach is the time of chesed and tzedakah. So the sense of solidarity is responsible on the part of the Jew, is responsible for the good. As a matter of fact, this sense of solidarity has never disappeared, has never vanished. The Jew, spiritually he needs the standard which the terrorists put up for him is a different story. But as far as solidarity of the Jew, the sense of responsibility for each other and the commitment to his people and the devotion of the individual to the people as such, and simply in the readiness to help and to extend the aid has always been, has always been perhaps the most beautiful characteristic trait of the Jewish people. They've never lost it. Whether the Jew is a bit assimilated or is observant, but there is this trait, Yodatias Machivov, this trait of Ami, to be together. Unless one actually drifts completely, but whoever didn't drift completely, no apostasy involved, or no vulgar assimilationism involved, is this sense of solidarity has never vanished on the part of the Jew. You can see now what's going on. Our solidarity with people in Israel, and vice versa. Not so easy for the Jew in the diaspora, for the Western Jew to simply somehow to unite with our brother in Eretz Yisrael. There are many problems involved. Our sympathies for them, are misinterpreted by our enemies. The enemies, speak of divided loyalties and so forth. But the sense of solidarity has never been suppressed. No enemy, no foe has ever succeeded in splitting the people. No. And if, I'll be frank with you, if in the 1940s I had doubts and we had sinned that time, because if we had responded call for help, which actually came across the ocean from various ghettos in Poland and Lithuania and the Baltic lands, we might have saved hundreds of thousands of Jews. We did not respond to that. I thought at that time that the Jewish people, Jewish community is falling apart. There is no more any feeling of solidarity, of being together, of living together, of suffering together, of fighting together. All right, of course, it was a terrible crime on our part. That's why I don't like to criticize Roosevelt or Churchill, because we have sinned as well. Since we are not, we have purged ourselves. The great sin and the great crime we have committed, tolerating the destruction of 6 million Jews. But nowadays, with regard to Benedict Israel, we responded in a manner which is worthy, actually, like proud, like members of a proud race, without cowardice, and without any reservations. So the sense of solidarity still prevails. Pesach is basically the holiday of solidarity. The Jews in Egypt, I want you to understand, the Jews in Egypt don't have, we have a very funny picture. Not everybody was a slave. The slaves, the masters. Masters among them. Master was a slave to an Egyptian master. But it wasn't, the slavery was not uniform, was not homogeneous. There were various degrees of slavery. Chazal tell us that the tribe of Levi, of Levi, has never been a slave, has never been oppressed. And most probably the masses have been oppressed. The richer, the people who, the aristocracy of the Jewish aristocracy, people who were rich and wealthy, apparently paid high taxes. But there's no doubt that they didn't have to work physically. Still, but there was unity of purpose, was a sense of solidarity, responsibility. Each one felt the pain of next door neighbor, his fellow man. And that's what brought about the good. That's why the Rebbeinu Shlom emphasized to Moshe. Es oni ami. He could have said, es oni bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. Why es oni ami? Because there are people already. There is interrelatedness. There is a sense of sympathy, of compassion, of readiness to help. And that's why Pesach, before we sit down, we make that declaration. Olach ma'an yod acholah, the son of the Arod and Mitzrayim. And I interpret the Arod and Mitzrayim means simply, in the land of Mitzrayim, while they were slaves. And the acholu means something else, not only they share the bread with each other. The acholu in Hebrew means not only eating, they ate, they share the bread. One had a matzah, the other one didn't have any. So what did he do? He split a matzah into two and passed half a matzah onto his unfortunate brother who could not afford to bake matzah. His sabur, they didn't have the little flour and the water. He couldn't mix flour with water. He didn't have any time. The acholu all of us know that our forefathers have shared with each other the Avod in Mitzrayim. And I want you to understand something else. Here is called the Chvin Yeseve Yechel. Please read carefully. Called the Chvin Yeseve Yechel. Whoever is hungry should come and eat. Called the Trich, whoever is in need, Yeseve Yitzchak, should come and celebrate the Seder. I mean, Yitzchak, that means celebrate. You know? To make the Pesach, it means to celebrate the Seder. Well, why this duplication? Isn't the duplication redundant? Redundant? It's plain redundancy. You call the Chvin Yeseve Yechel, call the Trich Yeseve Yitzchak. Why this duplication? The answer apparently is as follows. You see, call the Chvin whoever is hungry, Yeseve Yechel should come and eat. Call the Trich, what does it mean, call the Trich? No, yes, what is called the Trich? I mean, you understand a little bit of Hebrew. What is called the Trich? He said, call the Chvin, whoever is hungry. What's the difference between being hungry and being in need? What do you say? No. This is nonsense. Ah, exactly. All the Trich means he is in need. What kind of need? He's not in need of bread. Because whoever is in need of bread, there's a shortage of matzah. He's called the Chvin. The Chvin means he's hungry. If he doesn't have enough food, he's called the Chvin. But he's called the Trich. He wants to celebrate with someone else. He's alone. He has a lot of matzah. He has a lot of wine he can do. I mean, he's actually he's not in need for food. He can afford a meal to celebrate the Passover. What's called the Trich is in need for something else. He's lonely. He has no home. He has no family. I mean, there are so many ways. He called it Trich. He doesn't say Yeseve Yechel. He doesn't say, he doesn't. The invitation is not with Yechel, he should be. The invitation is he should be with us. He should spend the Pesach with us. Yeseve Yitzchak means to celebrate with us. See, it is a plea or invitation addressed to poor people and to lonely people. Lonely people might be a millionaire. It's completely irrelevant. Called it Trich, whoever needs us, needs me, wants to spend the Pesach with me, Yeseve Yitzchak should come and celebrate. Not the Yechel. The idea is that the Yechel has enough food at home. The Yitzchak means to celebrate. Yeseve Yitzchak. Why do I mention Olachmo Anyo? I could have said Olachmo, because I said before, the Anyo is already somehow anticipates a question about matzah, and I give the answer before the question was addressed to me, and this makes no sense. I believe this here is involved in another concept. There is a Mishneh in Asicha Saperi, a very strange Mishneh. Mishneh is, for instance, to hire a day laborer. So I have got to feed him the day he works. From here, I have to provide him with food. I have to give him his meals. So there is a Mishneh like that. Question. If I have not stipulated what kind of food I'm going to give him, he can demand from me the most delicious food and the delicacy. She called Yisroel Bnei Melochim. All Jews are princes. And he's entitled to the same treatment as a prince is entitled, as the son of the king is entitled. So there was a formula when they hired a day laborer to do some work. They used to write in the agreement, or orally, I mean, stipulate, Ein loch elai, all you can demand from me, elo pas v'kitni es dolai. Just bread and some vegetables. Some beans, kidneys is beans, some vegetables, but nothing more. But if he had not stipulated, so the day laborer can ask him, I mean, for the most luxurious, I mean, for the rarest, I mean, delicacies, and the best food possible, which only kings and princes eat. Don't forget, that time, Talmudic times, so many, 1800 or 1700 years ago, the difference as far as dietary habits are concerned between a king and an ordinary man was tremendous. Now, actually, there is equalization of diets. The king eats the same food as I do or you do. I mean, there is no difference, basically. First of all, delicious food does not mean healthy food. And secondly, there is certain control on the part of the rich man as far as his dietary habits are concerned. Yeah. But in antiquity, not only antiquity, yes, even in Middle Ages, I mean, the dietary habits of the king, the dietary habits of a plain person, they were completely incongruous. They were completely incommensurable. So in the law is that if I have not stipulated properly, that all he can claim as far as food is concerned is pasta, kidneys, bread, and some vegetables. So then he may demand, he may make the most fantastic demands upon me as far as his meals are concerned. She called his royal bnei melachim. I want you to understand, it's a very strange halacha. Olach. So now if I address an invitation to those who are in need to come to eat with me. Please listen I tell them that I'll feed them, they can have the same claim to me as the Mishnah tells us about the day labor. They can say we are not satisfied with this type of food. We want a better type. So we announce, I mean, the announcement when the Yidden wants to understand is a very strange Allah. So now if I address an invitation to those who are in need, come eat with me, and I tell them that I'll see them, so they can have the same point to me as the Mishnah tells us about the daily, and say we are not satisfied with this type of, we want a better type. So we announce, I mean, the announcement when they used to, it was practice. Whenever they hired a daily, I used to tell them, never mind, they used to agree on the wage. And secondly, Ein lo halai alo pas v'kitnias gula. All you can demand is pas. If he hadn't stipulated pas v'kitnias, then the labor can make all kinds of demands. The labor may ruin the employer. The employee may ruin the employer, not so much as the wages, but as far as the food, the quality of Mishnah. First Mishnah, Aseret Sapega. Aseret, call his world name Elohim anymore. Every Jew is a king or son of a king. He can claim, he can melee claim the best which. So now if I address myself, I send the invitation, this was not just a formality, I used to send out messengers, inviting people to come, so called the Chvi Yisr Yechel, called the Tzuch Yisr Yisr, whoever came, used to say, I mean, I expected the better, I'm not joking, better meal. I thought that you serve me different items. So the announcement is, we just invite for all Achman. It's not a joke, I'm not joking. We just invite for Lachman Yom. And whoever knows the Mishnah that Sefer Sapeirim, Ein lo halai alo pas v'kitnias gula. Pas v'kitnias is exactly what Lachman. O Lachman Yom, the acholu avasono be'arod v'tzrayim. I extend an invitation just to share Lachman Yom. The meager bread or the meager meal which I have. And if whoever is satisfied with the Lachman Yom, and he's hungry, he called the Shvi Yisrael. Whoever is satisfied with Lachman Yom, with the meager meal, and the poor food, he's called it Tzrir, but he doesn't drink. He might have, the fellow might say, at home I left a better, I had a better. All right, I didn't want to spend the Seder night alone. If I had known the poor quality of food you are going to serve, I wouldn't have come. Called it Tzrir, whoever wants to be with friends, celebrate the Passover in company, is Yisrael Yisach. But the invitation is just sent out for all Lachman. The Acholu, why do I emphasize the Acholu of the Son of God? I'm trying to emphasize. The meal will not be just as meager. The meals of a nothing. Now you understand the transition to a Shato Ocho, the Shona Boba Aradisoy. This is basically, it's not just a transition. Transition is a problem. Shato Ocho, now this year I'm here. And here I cannot tell you anything else. Shona Boba Aradisoy, there you'll get a better. And he explains why is Barod Israel, I mean, the food will be of a better, higher quality. For sure, because of Shato Avdi, I am a slave, so I cannot afford it. The Shona Bob Necherin, I'll treat you like a free man. Now, I can treat you only as an Eved treats his fellow Eved. I have nothing. If I can afford it, I can't afford it, I can't. I mean, his first place, I cannot afford it. I can afford it to give him a man. You all luxuries. That's the whole Achmanyo. Basically, the whole Achmanyo is to renew our pledge of solidarity. It's a renewal of pledge of solidarity among the Jewish. Solidarity between individual, and solidarity between individual and Jewish communities. Because this sense of solidarity, according to Chazal, as being was responsible for the redemption of the Jews. The Ben Yishlom said to Abraham, "Tigil Yisrachu Beret Leilohem, Ba'avodum Vinu Meisom Arba Meishon Gamasad Gei Asher Yavedu Dono Nechi Parakei Yitzu Rechus Godel." What is the Rechus Godel they took out of Mitzrayim? What is the Rechus Godel? What was the great fortune took out? What did it take out of it? They became a people. Arami Evidovi, we read it Pesach in Agode. Arami Evidovi, Vayered Mitzrayimo, Vahishom Ligi Godel. What do you mean Ligi Godel? Numerically, we are not very strong, numerically very strong, 600 people. Ligi Godel means a great people, a great solidarity, the first foundation of greatness of a people. If there's no solidarity, people cannot be great. Because finally, people, all right, perhaps sociologically, it's more than the sum total. But at least the people must be the sum total of the individuals which constitute it. If there is no solidarity between individual, there's no sense of responsibility, there's no readiness to share, and there is no readiness to commit yourself, I mean, to the welfare of the people or to the welfare of your fellow man, so there is no gigode. So basically, Mitzrayim, what Avdu, slavery and oppression and maltreatment, have taught the Jew is to be to a sense of unity with the people. And not only Mitzrayim, the Middle Ages, I mean. After all, why, actually, Jews distinguish themselves as Balei Tzof Nadav Shah. No, you have no concept of it. You have sometimes philanthropies among Gentiles, and they give fantastic amount of money. But the plain docker, the plain individual docker, Gentiles don't know. They don't know what it is. The Greeks didn't know. The Greeks did not know what docker is. In general, the word, the term chesed, was alien to Greek. They have not term for it. The Greeks is virtue, is courage, I mean, truth. No, they act virtues. Chesed, to take the table of virtues, which was composed by Aristotle or Plato, even Socrates, chesed and chesed, we didn't understand courage yet. In the battle, that's a good attempt. That's why Goy was so impressed in 1967. Ah, it's Hashkin Lohore, this is a fact that one who does not have should be held by the individual. Now in America, the welfare state is changing. Actually, now the welfare state is a Jewish institution, not a Jewish institution. Welfare state, actually, the way Chazal describes a meluche, it means a welfare state. Should take care of the poor. The community takes care of the poor. The community used to take care of the poor. It's a welfare community. We have no statehood. It's in the sense of solidarity. What taught us solidarity? You know what taught us? Oppression and persecution and exile. The Rambam says, "Bechol Yisrael ke'achim eimo." All Jews are brothers. Mi rachim aleihem im leach. Who will have mercy if not the brothers? Exactly, sense of solidarity. Is olach ma'anya basically the purpose of olach ma'anya? The renewal of the sense of solidarity and actually a proclamation. There are one people who are ready to help share. Pesach night is the night of share. But ever, as I told you, this is the basic. Idea which underlies the whole Achman. But without sharing, so the whole Seder becomes without manifest them, the sense of solidarity, responsibility, and the unity, the readiness to share and participate. But here, we know, after all, it is all probably the Mishnah. Here, when you extend an invitation, and it was a historic morality, so you always have to enlighten the fellow nearby what you are ready, not to arouse hopes, it will never come true, and not to simply, that's what you say, Olach Mu'anyo, the Achola of the Son of God. This is the bread, this is the meager meal, we invite for that. You want to share? You are welcome. You promise that whatever will be redeemed, I mean, will serve a better ultimate. Whoever will see the Mishnah, look up the Mishnah, Asechas Apel, and you'll find this was a part of the agreement between any day laborer or any wage earner, and his employer. He has no claims as far as the same Nusra, the same stipulation was incorporated into Allah. So this is the introduction. Of course, look. Next we'll take up the Manishtan Alliance. Yisgadel Yisgadei Shmei Rabo.